Now here's a story about a woman with dreams. So picture perfect at 13 and Ebony's queen. Beneath the surface, it was more than just a quick smile. Nobody knew about a secret, so it took a while. I can see his tears fall.
Yes, guys, you're tuned into another episode of Cricket Talks. This is now episode 5 of the main show, Cricket Talks, our weekly show. I'm actually going to be going solo today. I've got a couple of topics I want to talk about, and I want to test out the idea of going solo and not always having a guest on my show to talk about topics as well with. So the two things I wanted to talk about was, if you're following my show properly, you'll understand that I have Cricket Talks and then Cricket Talks Extra, which has now just been merged very recently. I had exclusive content for Instagram and LinkedIn, which is Cricket Talks Online, for a few episodes. And then I had Cricket Talks Extra, which is the audio exclusive. I've now decided to merge them. It's going to be able to provide the audio and visuals at the same time, and it's still going to make the video exclusive to Instagram and LinkedIn. So it's just going to save me time, and it's going to get you guys straight to the point and not have you scrambling for content to sort of listen to, if we're being honest. Cricket Talks, episode 5, what we're going to be talking about. Well, I've got two things I want to talk about, which is the India-Australia first test match. At the time I'm recording this, if you guys know, I record every Tuesday and release every Saturday the visuals and audio to these episodes. So India-Australia just a couple days ago, 5 days ago now in fact, and the next game is on Boxing Day. They've just had their first face-off, and the second topic I want to talk about was the idea of Mohammad Amir retiring. The left arm quick, the generational talent that Pakistan used to call him over the last 10 years or so, an extremely strange career. Obviously, he had his match-fixing problems. He took quite a few years out for a fast bowler. He has become a lot more precious because of your physical ability that you're going to have to be able to uphold and the pace that you'll be able to bowl at. But Mohammad Amir has come back after 3 to 4 years of a ban, had jail time, and has still come back, and not exactly the same bowler that he used to be, but he was very easily one of the best swing bowlers in our time right now, despite coming back. So these are the two topics we're going to be covering in today's episode. Let's start with the first one, India versus Australia. An interesting test match, something that if we looked at the last episode, we spoke briefly about it, particular changes that could be happening, what we thought was going to be going into the test match, and the general idea was, at the end of it, was that we thought it was going to be a fairly tight match. You know, we had Kohli versus Smith, a great matchup. Labuschagne has been in a slightly irregular rocky patch for someone like him. He's been in incredible form. We've got Matthew Wade, who's come in from the T20s, scoring some great, having some great stints. And then, is his position going to be at risk, a test team? Is he going to be taken out for Cameron Green? So there's a load of questions to be asked around it. And if I'm being perfectly honest, I'd physically be lying to you if I say that, yes, Australia was going to win by a landslide. And the result it happened in was extremely weird. It kind of shook up international cricket slightly. If you guys saw the game, India got their lowest test score in history, if I'm not wrong, one of the lowest in test history, 36 all out. For a team that has Kohli arguably around his prime, we've got Chateshwar Pujara, Mayank Agarwal, Prithvi Shaw, Jadeja, Ajinkya Rahane, all these great talented batsmen to get 36 all out. And there's a lot of factors around that, why that happened, and does the pink ball have does the pink ball have an impact on that? And we're going to be talking a little bit about that. So let's break it down innings by inning. If you guys watched the match again, or if you saw highlights and clips from it, it's a particular clip of the very first innings went viral when Ricky Ponting actually said, I think what Mitchell Stark is going to do is, based on his Prithvi Shaw's performances and his stance and his technique, he does actually leave quite a big gap between bat and pad. And that's going to lead him to actually bowling one that goes back into him and eventually bowl him out. And that very next ball, Prithvi Shaw got bowled to that exact ball that Ricky Ponting described. It was a remarkable bit of analysis from Ricky Ponting, to be honest. It really shows the level of quality in Australian cricket management right now. Justin Langer, Ricky Ponting, they've got some really great heads to help manage the team that they already have. And it was clearly evident in that ball. Prithvi Shaw went out for his second ball of the very first test innings. Mayank Agarwal, Sue went after, bowled by Pat Cummins, Chateshwar Pujara, 43 off an incredibly slow 160 balls. We know Chateshwar Pujara is a grinder by any means. He's a Yunus Khan, he's an Ajinkya Rahane. He takes his time with the bat, and he has no guilt around it, which is fair enough. Test cricket is about that, and he's probably one of the few players that still are. If you look at other teams, other test teams, they have got players that do look to speed up the game slightly. You know, you've got your Ben Stokes, your Joss Butlers, who do have the ability to speed up the game. But Pajara is very much stuck in the classic way, which is always sort of needed in a sense when things do get rough. And he scored a valiant 43. Virat Kohli, an impressive 74. There was a lot of bad fielding going on during that first innings, and he managed to get his 74 off another slow 180 balls. Ajinkya Rahane, 42. Hanuman Vihari, 16. And it sort of kind of went downwards from that point. Riddhiman Saha and Ashwin finished the day off 9. And Ashwin was on around 9 as well, and they could have really finished it off from there on. They went into the next day, lose their wickets pretty quickly. Umesh Yadav, Bumrah and Shami weren't really looking to stick on either, since they're not natural batsmen. Standout performance from that innings had to be Mitchell Stark, obviously, with his 4 wickets, 2.5 economy, 21 overs with just 53 runs, which is pretty impressive. Hazlewood, a completely underrated bowler in my opinion. Yes, we could say that we're looking at one of the most talented Australian bowling attacks for a while now, the Stark, Hazlewood and Cummins combination, which works in all three formats. But I do still think Hazlewood is slightly underrated because of Pat Cummins and Mitchell Stark's dominance in international cricket and franchise cricket as a whole. Nathan Lyon came in, obviously the first string spinner, 21 overs, two maidens, 68 runs and a wicket, 3.2 economy, a standard sort of performance from Nathan Lyon. Not really many negatives to take away from that, since he only bowled for 68 runs in those 20 overs. Labuschagne came on for 1 over. And Cameron Green, the debutant, someone who's extremely impressive through both domestic cricket, Premier cricket and Australia A cricket in the game right before this test match, where he scored 100 and took several wickets as well. So it was good to see him getting a chance. He got 9 overs, 2 maidens, 15 runs and no wickets, which is 1.6 economy, which is a good start to his first innings and a good impression to leave as well. So India got bowled out for 244. We thought it was a fairly competitive score, and Australia came into bat next. They've got, in terms of selections, we did have the idea of David Warner was injured, so he was going to miss the first test. Matthew Wade was going to come in for that, sign his selection away by being the man that Australia had to have to stand up and open the batting alongside Joe Burns. In my opinion, yes, he is an opener, but not a test opener by any means. He doesn't even open for domestic cricket for Queensland. So if it's Queensland that he plays for. So in my opinion, he did potentially sign a sort of death will by having to take the opening role. You know, there's going to be a lot more swing that he faces than in T20 cricket for a lot longer. He was going to be playing sort of completely different type of cricket, and I did think he wasn't going to perform that well anyway, unfortunately. If you guys know Matthew Wade's performances, he normally does bat for Australia at the lower order, so it was going to be a big jump from him to open in the test team as well. Joe Burns was there, Labuschagne, Smith, Head, Cameron Green, which is a sort of the standard team. Tim Payne batting slightly lower than usual, and then you have your 4 bowlers. So we'll run through the scores quickly. Like I just said before, Matthew Wade wasn't really going to perform, if we're being honest. 8 runs, 51 balls, or 15 strike rate, got out to Bumrah. Joe Burns, similar fashion, 8 runs off 41 balls, 19 strike rate, got out to Bumrah, both in LBWs. Umesh Yadav got the third wicket, managed to get Labuschagne out. Smith got out very early. For someone who loves to bat, Labuschagne and Smith, they only pulled out 48 runs, which you could say was a bit of an irregular event for Australia cricket recently. You know, we're used to seeing them pile on at least 50 runs each in each inning. For the people who love batting, and I think those kind of people are always going to look to do big performances like the Kane Williamsons. They just want to bat for long periods of time and get your runs. So for me, I'd say it was definitely weird for Labuschagne and Smith to both get out early. It did show the quality, and Ashwin managed to get Smith out for just 1 run. Travis Head is an extremely interesting one, because is he performing as well as he is usually? No, we can argue that Travis Head is an extremely talented cricketer. He scores tons of runs in domestic cricket, and he does genuinely deserve a place in the Australian side. Should he potentially be taken out of the test side as a for a cover? For me, yes. when David Warner manages to recover, I'd personally say take out Travis Head, put Matthew Wade back in for number five, which is slightly higher than he usually does, but it's better than opening, and take Travis Head out for a while. I think we're in the Australian season right now, let him get some runs in on the back, give him some confidence back, and then bring him into the test side when he's ready. Cameron Green came into bat six, got 11 runs. Tim Payne was sort of the anchor role in this particular innings, despite only making 191. He put up a valiant 73, looked extremely confident. And for someone who, I'll be honest, is not the most talented batsman in the batting order right now, if I look at the Australian batting lineup, out of all seven players, I'd probably say Tim Payne is the sixth best, if I'm being honest, with Cameron Green just behind him. Slow, just because of the idea of he hasn't got enough test match experience behind him. Pat Cummins, Mitchell Starc and Nathan Lyon obviously did what they could. Pat Cummins got out on a duck. Mitchell with 15, Nathan with 10 and Josh with 8. So at this point, we've got an India lead of about 50 runs. Australia will be looking to get him out early, take some early wickets. I think, if I'm not wrong, there was a bit of time left. There was a remainder of the day left where Australia could bowl with, obviously with the new ball under the lights, extremely hard conditions. So there was going to be a need for a night watchman, and hopefully Australia would be looking to just take a few wickets late at night. So in the morning, they were sort of put straight onto pressure, and that's exactly what happened. India got bowled out for 36, which is, I'll say it again, India fans are shocked right now. We're looking at a team that is constantly known for their batting ability. 36, to be bowled out for 36 is an extremely low total. There's a lot of teams that can get bowled out for low totals, but 36 is it's crazy. Pretty sure a big problem. We're going to be talking about potential changes for the next test match just after this, but pretty sure 4 runs, 4 balls, bowled by Pat Cummins to the exact same delivery that Mitchell Starc bowled, only with the right arm, was going down straight and nipped back in, and just pretty sure just couldn't defend it properly. Mayank Agarwal, 9 runs only. Jasprit Bumrah, the night watchman, could only amount 2 runs. Pujara got 0, Kohli got 4, Ajinkya Rahane got 0, 8-4, 0-4, 1. It was sort of a pattern at that point. A really disappointing innings. They kind of stuck to pace at that point. Australia knew what worked, and it was clearly they knew what they were doing with the swinging ball. Nathan Lyon and Labuschagne weren't bowled at all, which was, I guess, expected with the pink ball. They were trying to attack as much as they could with the swing they had available. Mitchell Starc went for 1.1 economy off his 6 overs for 7 runs. Pat Cummins took 4 wickets for 2 economy, and Hazelwood, an underrated player, but I'm sure and I hope that he gets the credit he deserves. 5 wickets for only 8 runs at a 1.6 economy in just 5 overs. So that's a wicket and over. 3 of those overs are maidens, and he took 5 wickets, which is an outstanding performance. He has such a fluid action. He manages to swing the ball very well back out. He's an extremely talented cricketer. And I said before, is he underrated? We talk about Australia having probably one of the best attacking lineups right now with Starc, Cummins and Hazelwood, but Hazelwood being the most underrated from them at all, by all means. And so at that point, we're looking at India, who have only managed to put a total of 90, of about 80 to 90 runs where Australia had to chase it. And it was obviously going to be light work. They had 2 days to do it. They had 2 to 3 days to do it. Matthew Wade, 33. A lot more runs than a better performance than usual. But he just unfortunately got out to a stumping. Joe Burns managed to get his 50 not out. Labuschagne, again, another low score, 6 of 10. Maybe he was slightly impatient, but I do think you have to really stick with him. Labuschagne is a run scorer by all means. And I think this might have just been a factor that might have affected a lot of this, would have been the pink ball, and maybe it was just a tough game to play since you're playing under the lights as well. Steve Smith 1 of 1, and they managed to chase it very comfortably. They won by 8 wickets, which is a landslide victory by all means. They bowled out India for 36, and as much as this was a landslide victory, and India have got a historic loss in that sense with their 36 all out, there is a lot of things to be taken away from this, a lot of news, a lot of opinions that you can sort of take away from this. So I guess the first thing you can take away from this is selection changes. Now, from Australia's point of view, there aren't many that can be changed. If Warner is fit enough, he'll obviously play. Like I said before, has Matthew Wade signed a sort of death wheel in that sense? Unfortunately, yes, his place is probably going to be taken away, if not Travis Head, who would be swapped out where Matthew Wade would fill in for him, and then Travis Head would have to leave where Warner would play at the front, at the top of the order. But on another way, we're also looking at, apart from that, Australia doesn't really need any more changes in that sense. They've got a pretty strong team. They've got their mainland streamline spinner, Nathan Lyon. They've got their second string, Labuschagne, who's more than capable to bowling 10 overs. You've got your three seam bowlers. You've got Cameron Green, who's also available and is bowling some really good overs. You look at the first inning, the 1.5 economy thereabouts. Didn't take any wickets, but bowled some really good line lengths. Was very tight with his bowling. So Australia as a whole look like a very strong unit right now. Apart from, you know, we're looking at Stephen Smith and Labuschagne didn't get as many runs, but, you know, they are run machines. It's just going to be a blip in their career. And apart from that, Stephen Smith, Labuschagne, Tim Payne, they've got nothing to worry about. We're looking at a very strong Australian team right now. India, on the other hand, have a few changes they could be making. The first one being, obviously, Prithvi Shaw. Prithvi Shaw does have that problem. It's been exposed. It's been told about. And it's something he needs to seriously work on. Obviously, now that's been said, he hasn't really no other choice but to work on it. So does he get taken out? Unfortunately for me, yes. If you looked at the Australia A game, you know, it's not a massively popular thing to do, to watch the A games before tour starts or while tours are happening or a different format is happening. A games do happen against the other team's A team. But if you watched it, Shubman Gill and Prithvi Shaw were both opening in that team. Prithvi Shaw did look a little uncomfortable, if I'm being totally honest, from a spectator's point of view. Shubman Gill, on the other hand, looked extremely confident. He was hitting those fours. He didn't exactly make a ton of runs, but he did look extremely confident. He was middling the ball most times and he got out to some fairly unfortunate dismissals. So going into that first test as a whole, I would have actually preferred Shubman Gill, despite me saying in the past, Shubman Gill is a T20 player. If anything, he needs to be given a T20 shot when India win 2-0 in a series, in a three series game. That is when Shubman Gill can be potentially brought on and start to be integrated, where Rohit Sharma and Shikhar Dhawan are potentially going to be retiring in a few years. But looking at the test side, the way Shubman Gill had in himself, I don't watch a huge amount of domestic Indian cricket, but Shubman Gill, so I don't exactly know Shubman Gill's stats in that sense, but from what I saw in the Australia A game, from a strong Australia bowling attack in that game, Shubman Gill looked very confident. I did think, and I did say on Twitter, if you're not following me already, @Moblox_, should Shubman Gill be put into the first test anyway for Prithvi Shaw? And for me, the answer was yes. I would have actually preferred him over that. And the second one that's also been talking about, something I didn't really consider, but now that I look at it, it's definitely a viable option. Wasim Jaffa mentioned it in an encoded message towards Ajinkya Rahane, which was bring both Shubman Gill in and bring KL Rahul in, the wicketkeeper batsman, the run scoring superstar for India right now in limited overs formats. Should he be brought in? Now, there aren't exactly many replacements that have been said so far, but I'm guessing the obvious one would be Hanuman Vihari or Mayank Agarwal. Both of them, both very talented batsmen, but they haven't been able to put runs on the board, frankly. Mayank Agarwal has been struggling in all formats, to be honest, and there is really a decision that needs to be made around that. Do you put enough confidence in Mayank Agarwal to play the next test match? You know, it's going to be an important deciding test match since it's only a four game series, so there is really not a huge amount of room for error. Does KL Rahul come in for Hanuman Vihari, or does he get brought in for Mayank Agarwal? No, I don't personally know the answer to that question. I want Rahul in. Whether who replaces who is another question. Vihari and Mayank Agarwal, both extremely talented batsmen, but that decision does have to be made by Ravi Shastri and the BCCI. If I had to right now make a decision on that, I'd probably say Mayank Agarwal. Yes, he's opening. Can you bring KL Rahul to open? Potentially, yes. I do have enough confidence in him to be able to take the new ball. whether he's confident enough and whether he's fit enough, and I'm sure he is fit enough, but it's more about confidence and feeling at the moment. That's a whole other conversation. It's contextual. You need to be able to understand that, and I don't personally have the views for that. So that was the first topic we sort of discussed. The second one is some news that came around. It's a bit of a weird change from talking about a whole game to talking about just one piece of news, but if you do want to hear about my viewpoint on the New Zealand Pakistan series, it is right now on the Cricket Talks extra links. I talk about it game by game since they were T20 games. And the news I want to take to that, which relates to Pakistan cricket, is Mohammad Amir's retirement. He has called retirement. Whether it's official or not hasn't been exactly stated yet, but he has called that he's retiring. He cannot handle, frankly, management. And from what it sounded like, he wasn't happy with Mickey Arthur and Waqar Yunus Misbah Haq and Waqar Yunus in management. Now, breaking that down, first of all, Misbah Haq and Waqar Yunus, what do I think of them in management? Personally, I don't want them there. When the news came out that Misbah Haq and Waqar Yunus were in management, yes, they are both they have many accolades, they've been very successful in their own careers, but for me, it was a move that generally wasn't needed. I've mentioned it before, it's been mentioned in other times as well. Shoaib Akhtar has mentioned it on his show. Why does Pakistan constantly change their selectors and their coaches? It's generally not a thing that's needed. Pakistan finally sort of found a formula to a good management system that they've been struggling for years. And that winning formula was Azam Mahmood and Mickey Arthur. For me, I was very happy with Mickey Arthur. Yes, he didn't win a huge amount of silverware. They did take the 2017 Champions Trophy. But the reason I've liked them so much was because of the development they made. We went from 2016, a reckless side, to be honest. 2015, 2016, 2014 were very awkward years in Pakistan cricket. We had unfit players. We had players who were coming around. A few just got taken away from match fixing. Shahjul Khan had that issue when PSL started. Just after his first season, he was taken away because of some match fixing issues. Khalid Latif is all the same thing. So Pakistan weren't exactly in the greatest place. Mickey Arthur was brought in and the first few changes he made was to do with fitness. In the media, it sort of caused a little controversy. Why is he focusing on fitness? Surely player selection should be more important. And the reality is he had a very good point. Pakistan had some very unfit players who were not fit to perform on the field. And cricket is now not a game of batting and bowling, but fielding is just as important. You get exposed for it. You lose games because of it in T20 cricket and ODI cricket especially. Pakistan's had that issues where we've lost games by close margins because of poor fielding, and that fielding effort could have potentially made the difference between bat and ball. Now that obviously had to leave the likes of Kamran Akmal, Umar Akmal, Shahjul Khan, all these sort of players. Shahnoz Shahjul was already taken out of the team anyway, but the likes of Umar Akmal, who was actually brought in for the Champions Trophy side but was deemed unfit, so could not play anyway. So that could have been a whole new situation for Pakistan in the Champions Trophy, but that's the first change that Mickey Arthur made, which I like. And he then looked towards bringing in a lot of younger players as well. You know, Pakistan actually rose to number one in the T20 rankings, which is extremely good. We won 11 successive series because of it. We were beating Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, a World 11. Pakistan were looking in an extremely good place at that point. We're looking towards the World Cup as to be sort of the favourites at that point. We had players brought in who were young, Mohammad Hasnain, Sahib Zadafrahan, Hussein Talat, Shaheen Afridi, Fahim Ashraf, all these sort of players who are working around the experienced ones of Barbaraz and Hafiz, Shoaib Malik and Mohammad Amir and Wahab Riaz. And we were forming a really dynamic team. Shadab Khan also, who's now captain obviously of the Pakistan team until Barbara manages to come back in. And Pakistan cricket was genuinely in a good place. Test cricket wasn't at the greatest point at that time, especially towards the back end of Mickey Arthur's stint as a head coach. But I was personally very happy with where Pakistan cricket was at the moment. It was sort of the best time we've had for a while now. And management was finally in a good place. Ehsan Mahi, there's a whole conversation around that, but we'll not get too much into it. But Mickey Arthur, I was very happy with him as a head coach. When the move was made for Misbah Haq to suddenly be taken in as head coach and Waqar Yunus to be bowling coach, it just felt like a backward step to me. Why is Mistwell have been brought in? And the fact that he was made both selector and head coach could have made the would made the job so much more bigger, so much more pressure for him personally. And the first thing is, it was a move that's not needed, and for him to be given both selector and head coach responsibility, it was just a load of things that weren't needed, and I felt like he would take a lot of backward steps for absolutely no reason. Pakistan cricket was going to get worse, and if you look at the series that we had to play afterwards, the selections made were clearly reflective of that. We had Omar Akmal, who was attempted to be revived back into the team. We had Iftikhar Ahmed, who is still yet in the team, and yes, he is a viable option, but only as a cover, in my opinion. We had all these sort of players who were being brought in for absolutely no reason. We had the young players who were standing out, performing, looking really, really promising. And apart from really Shaheen Afridi, a lot of them were being dropped back. We lost Hussain Dalit, we lost Saad Zafarjan, we lost Fahim Ashraf for a while, who went into bad form, and we lost him only until recently. And I wasn't liking the way Pakistan cricket was going at the moment. So from that point of view, going back to Mohammad Amir's point, I do understand the idea of that. And Mohammad Amir's point, the main point being, why has he been taken off a contract? Why is he not being put in team selections? But a month later for a tour, he's being brought back saying, we need you for this particular tour. Now, for me, that doesn't make any sense. I fully understand where he's coming from at that point. If he does get not selected for, say, a New Zealand tour in this case, why should he be having to now change his priorities last minute to fit international duty that he wasn't originally being promised? Now, if Mohammad Amir was, say, preparing or resting for another franchise tournament, and now the selectors are calling him and saying, you need to be here in 2 weeks, how would you feel about that? Now it's become more of a reoccurring situation with Mohammad Amir. You know, he's in the back end career. He's being informally told. He hasn't actually been directly communicated well with the PCB. So he's being told a load of different things. He's been brought in, but at the same time, he's not being put into the plans of PCB cricket for the future. So it's an extremely confusing situation to be in. At the end of the day, a player does need to make their living. And yes, you can play for patriotic reasons, but there is a point where you need to start playing to provide for your family. So at that point, I understand. If Mohammad Amir was to be offered an A contract or a B contract, or and be directly told that, yes, okay, we're not going to give you a contract, but we are going to keep you in for all of these tours, it would have provided a lot more confidence, in my opinion. And Mohammad Amir wouldn't have made this rash decision. For me personally, going forward, I'd say that Mohammad Amir is probably going to come out of retirement. He probably will play a few more tours before actually calling retirement. He's an extremely young player right now. He's only 28 or 29. He still has about 4 years ahead of him of international cricket. He's an extremely talented player. He's sought after of most T20 tournaments around the world. He's playing in the Caribbean. He's playing in the PSL. He's playing in the Vitality Blast for Essex. He is definitely sought after. And it's not a case of he's at the back of his career and hence it's happening. This has nothing to do with form. This is more to do with bad management from the PCB. And I'll go into this quite a few times. Mickey Arthur should be back in. And that would be one of the main things that would help to put Pakistan in a better position to do the first place. I'm very sad that he has been taken out. And I'm more surprised that other boards haven't taken Mickey Arthur in straight away. And Sri Lanka did do that. And I would have actually seen West Indies hopefully making that move as well. But Sri Lanka took him, and fair enough. Mohammad Amir did also say that he preferred Mickey Arthur over the current captain of current leading role of Misbah Haq, which makes complete sense. Misbah Haq does come across as someone who looks a bit confused at times. I completely respect him as a player and a cricketer, but as a head coach of Pakistan right now, it was both potentially he could be a great coach. You know, he did Islamabad, the United, the PSL, but for me, it's just not a move that's needed right now, and I don't think he was ready for that particular role. So that kind of sums up episode 5 of Cricket Talks. I want you guys to let me know what you thought. If you're listening to this on YouTube when this comes out and the test match would have started by this point, by the time this comes out, the test match will have started, let me know what changes you would have made for the first test, whether it did happen or not. And for Mohammad Amir's situation, tell me your thoughts on it. Let me know your thoughts on him retiring. Should he have retired? Why did he retire? Would you have preferred him back in the team right now? Would you have offered him a contract? All these questions that can be answered around it. So if you want to let me know your answers, either DM me, email me, tweet tweet me or comment down in the visuals on the YouTube channel. So that was episode 5 of Cricket Talks, and we'll see you guys on episode 6. Now here's a story about a woman with dreams, so picture perfect at 13 and ebony queen. Beneath the surface, it was more than just a quick smile. Nobody knew about a secret, so it took a while. I could see a tear falls slow down the black.